what is wrong with the world is that we do not have all the right people at the table solving problems together, that we are trying to solve the world's biggest problems, and we're trying to do it with a very small section of the population that doesn't fully understand the problems they're solving. But seeing other emerging fund managers like us, who are women and people of color, who are out there creating these new funds with very little access to capital and a big, big struggle ahead, but who are continuing to fight really hard to change the industry for everyone, all of that gives me a lot of inspiration and hope for the future.
Welcome back to The Road Untraveled. I'm here today with Alisa Miller Out, founder and GP at Chloe Capital. Before joining the venture world, Alisa has played roles that span from founder of early stage businesses all the way to executive across global Fortune 500 companies. She also serves on the board of Switch, formerly Women 2.0, Singlebrook, and is a graduate of Columbia University. And I'm just thrilled to gather some of her insights and guidance for folks that are thinking about the startup or the VC journey. Alisa, thanks so much for being here. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thanks so much, Brian. Delighted to be here and connect with you and your listeners.
Perfect. As I read your bio on Chloe Capital, I just thought there's no way I can do this justice in a couple of sentences. So if you don't mind, would love to just give our listeners 2 minutes on, you know, your incredible journey to where you are today.
Great. Happy to give a quick intro to you and the listeners. So first, hi, everyone. I'm Alisa Miller Out, managing partner of Chloe Capital. I am a serial tech entrepreneur, a community builder, an investor, a mother. I'm mother to two amazing daughters and also my only son, who is my dog, Philip. The daughters are human. The son is the dog. All very amazing. The first part of my career was spent building a global software services company, servicing Fortune 500 companies and universities and startups. I spun out several software product businesses during that time as well, and prepared for a career as a VC by doing lots of mentoring of early stage and startup companies. Some other hats I wear as a mentor and advisor include as an entrepreneur in residence at Cornell University here in Ithaca, New York, where I'm based. I'm also an instructor and mentor with the National Science Foundation and the I-Corps program. I'm also an innovation advisor for New York State with the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, where I advise on an $800 million portfolio of clean energy companies and programs. Many for disadvantaged communities and with a DEI focus. So that's been really exciting to get to do that work as well. And I have a personal track record at this point of about 45 companies altogether. That's 7 that I've co-founded, 25 that I've invested in with Chloe Capital as a VC, the rest as angel investments. And I've seen 10 M&A transactions across that portfolio so far. And after a successful exit from my software services company, where I sold a division of the company, my partners and I founded Chloe Capital about 5 years ago. And just to give you the super quick summary on that, and then we'll go on to address all the other questions, but just so you have the overview on Chloe Capital, it is a movement-driven venture capital firm investing with a gender and diversity lens. We focus on diverse women tech leaders who are solving the world's biggest problems across climate, education, and health. Our superpower is our ecosystem building work. And our accelerator programs, which are how we build those ecosystems, allow us to access unique deal flow and also just help our founders with so much more than just writing a check by helping them with visibility, networks, and resources. And all of our accelerator programs are part of our larger initiative called the Invest in Women Tour, which has taken our programs all around the country and hopefully someday around the world as well.
Amazing. I don't know when you sleep, but it's truly incredible some of the stuff that you've been able to build. Let's talk a little bit about why you built Chloe Capital, because I think you've worn a bunch of different hats. You probably could have made your way up through Fortune 500. You probably could have kept building software businesses and selling them. Like what made you decide to build Chloe Capital?
Yeah, great question. Well, I'll talk a little bit about this from a team standpoint, because obviously there's a group of us who built Chloe together, but also from my personal standpoint, I guess. Sure. So for me personally on this journey, it was really about, you know, kind of an epiphany I had several years back when I was, you know, working towards exiting my software company. and my software services company. And I was attending all these conferences in the tech space on a regular basis. And as you can imagine, many of them didn't have folks that looked like me at the tech conferences. So in the tech world, as you know, a middle-aged woman, mother of two, I went to this one event, for example, that was, you know, close to 1,000 people. It was a big, big tech conference. I was in Atlanta. I'm there in this like just sea of, and it was almost all like young white college guys and, you know, just a few other demographics. But really, I looked around the entire room and I said, wow, I don't think there's a single mother in this room. And I thought to myself and I said, wow, you know, these are the technologies and innovations that are building the future that I feel so excited about, right? I'm excited about, I'm an optimist. As an entrepreneur, as an investor, I think I'm an eternal optimist. And I think about all these amazing technologies that are innovating and building this incredible future for us all and trying to make the world a better place in genuine ways. And I just thought to myself, wow, like, it's so critical if we're going to solve the world's biggest problems that we have all different voices at the table solving those problems together. I don't know how we're going to solve things like climate, you know, without having multiple diverse voices, for example, at the table. We need to have the folks who are being impacted by these problems firsthand, right? We need to have all of the different perspectives on each of these problems. It just doesn't make any sense from a problem solving standpoint or from a business standpoint. To not have the right people at the table. So I thought a lot to myself and I said, wow, this issue of like who's at the table feels very important to me personally. And it's important that we have all the voices at the table so that we can solve these problems together and solve them in a way for everyone and not just solve them for the very few in the population. And I thought a lot about what problems in the world I could solve and what I could address. And I was overwhelmed by the number of problems that are out there to solve as I thought about sort of what my next step would be. But the thought of addressing who solves the problem first and then going out to solve the problem, that felt like the right order to do things in. So I thought, okay, I can't solve all these problems by myself and I can't solve them all immediately. But what I can do is I can start to address this issue of who has access to the table to actually help solve the problems, who has access to capital. And I learned through obviously all the data in the industry that, you know, women, people of color were obviously getting vastly underrepresented in the venture capital space. It was less than 2% for women and less than 0.1% for women of color at the times when I was starting Chloe. The numbers haven't shifted that much, unfortunately, in the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, up a little, up down a little, you know, with the pandemic, which impacted women and people of color tremendously and disproportionately. Unfortunately, some of the numbers, you know, took a step back as well. So we saw that though at Chloe as an incredible opportunity. And I saw that personally as an incredible opportunity because at the same time, of course, all the data and the studies were showing that my thesis of, you know, let's address who's at the table, that diverse teams actually perform better financially, turns out, right? They deliver a better return on investment, more capital efficient. Women founders exit a full year earlier, according to recent pitch book studies. And that's not just a data point in the study. That's actually already playing out in our portfolio. We actually had our first exit just a few months ago, only 2 years after launching our first fund. So, which was a company called BasePaws, just acquired by Zoetis, the largest animal health company in the world. Tremendous success story. And we're so thrilled about it. So we were really looking at how we can address this issue of who's at the table. With that, our leadership team came together. We were all active as community builders in upstate New York, and we met through volunteer activities where we were all sort of giving back to the community as entrepreneurs and investors and came together around this shared purpose to invest in women, having all kind of experienced firsthand some of those stats that I just mentioned to you in both directions and seeing it personally. And we saw that this was the opportunity to make a outsized financial return while also making an impact, and that there didn't have to be a trade-off between those. The leadership team members have known each other for, you know, over a decade at this point. And we've all received multiple awards for our entrepreneurial ecosystem development work. And that was one of the things we bonded together over. And that continues to be one of our main differentiators at Chloe, is our willingness to really build this community, build the movement, and build the ecosystem around these founders. So it was our commitment to that diverse and inclusive startup community that really allowed the team to, you know, meet, come together prior to launching the firm together, and is allowed us to grow to the point where we have after 5 years. We just celebrated our 5-year anniversary and our 2-year anniversary of launching the fund. So, but the firm started earlier with our accelerator programs and with some SPVs to start, or special purpose vehicles to start building up our track record.
Yeah, fantastic. You've sat on both sides of the table, and we have a lot of early entrepreneurs, I'd say, call it 20 to 30 year olds who listen and aren't sure if they should go to venture or start a company, you know, and would just be curious, you know, what questions you would have asked yourself at that age to just help you better understand maybe where to start. So it might not be that you can't do both someday, but just if you have certain interests or, you know, are there certain things that you would almost rubric quiz yourself on at that age to help you get a better sense of which direction to at least kind of get going on?
Yeah, well, I can answer this from two different angles, actually. The first being connected to what we just discussed about this issue of, you know, solving the world's biggest problems, right? So part of it is thinking about what kind of problem you want to solve as an individual. So if you're looking to solve a problem that you can solve better as an entrepreneur by starting a company to help solve that and address that issue, that's one thing. There are some problems that need to be solved by multiple companies or by taking more of a portfolio approach, right? And in my case, what I learned through my journey was, you know, I started as an entrepreneur and started, you know, solving more specific problems as an entrepreneur and with these sort of individual companies one at a time, and realized that that wasn't enough to solve the bigger problems that I wanted to solve. And when I realized that issue I did want to solve of who has access to capital, who's at the table solving multiple problems, and looking at this more systemic approach, I realized that a portfolio approach and an investing approach made more sense. And that was what led me to that, you know, investor to found Chloe Capital. I'm still both. I'm still an entrepreneur and an investor because I founded Chloe Capital as an entrepreneur with my team. And then also, you know, as an investor right out of the gate as well. But that portfolio approach really made sense for solving and addressing the issues I wanted to solve and for getting more voices at the table. So what I would encourage folks who are thinking about this is try to look at what problems they're experiencing in their own lives, what things they're experiencing in the world, what's meaningful to them, what resonates, and then also asking themselves, what are my skill sets? Where can I best help these problems? Because one of the things I also realized that my skill sets were actually better suited to an investor to being an investor than as an entrepreneur also, just in terms of the skills I had picked up along the way. And so understanding where do your skill sets apply? Where can you make the biggest difference, right? Because not every person is meant to solve every problem. There are some that are going to resonate more personally, and there are some where your skills are a better match, and there's some where your passion is just a better match and where you really just enjoy and, you know, and feel passionate about it. In my case, I've been lucky to have all three come together for me finally, but it took me, you know, 20 years to do that, you know? So that wasn't an overnight thing. And when I started my journey, I didn't know what an entrepreneur was. I didn't know what a venture capitalist was. None of that made any sense to me at all. I hadn't even heard of careers in venture capital when I was in college and when I was early starting in my career. So I didn't even know that was an option or a career path. You know, it was something I stumbled on way later in my journey. I majored in theater in college. So it was, you know, a long journey for me going through, you know, the film and the commercial production world and the theater production world, all the way through to being in the technology world and in the thick of that, all the way through to becoming a venture capitalist. It's quite a journey. But after those 20 years, I can safely say, like, yes, I've actually pulled all those threads together and that I'm in a career where I am truly, deeply passionate about my mission and our mission as a team. It is an area where all of my skill sets apply and where I feel like this is something I can be the best in the world at. And it's something where I can bring my whole self to the table and all my different experiences actually make sense and come together. And it's an area where I can really make a difference in the world and solve a problem that is really meaningful to myself and to many, many others. So it's coming together, but it took a while to get there. So be patient too with yourself if you're still early on this journey. And it's okay to have some different iterations and pivot a few times and learn from all those experiences and just know that they do all come together. I still draw on all my different experience when speaking with you. I draw on all those different experiences from early in my career as well as a venture capitalist. Like, I'm pulling out my theater background right now as I have to be on this podcast with you. Who would think that a venture capitalist needs theater training, but turns out you do, right? So all those threads do end up coming together in one way or another.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And I, to your point around, you know, portfolio construction, it's also similar in that regard. You know, your experiences come in a diversified manner, which ultimately allows you to build a more diversified portfolio. And so it's for younger folks out there, I definitely think that be patient hashtag is very resonant. And, you know, going different directions, you can still end up in a unique place it doesn't mean you needed to start there. So
absolutely. And I will add that being an investor is definitely something you can get to at any point in life. And it can kind of be valid. Like, I think the experiences you have as an operator and as an entrepreneur are so invaluable as an investor later on. So if I was going to do the two things in order, I would say the order I did it in worked really well of being an entrepreneur and that leading to becoming an investor, as opposed to the other way around. Although yeah. I've seen people do it the other way around and make it work too. So no rules. There are no rules. You make your own rules. That's the beauty about this world.
That's right.
And with this field and industry in particular.
Certainly. I want to talk a little bit about mentorship, because obviously across those roles, you've also played a role as mentor or advisor or coach to other folks who have built companies. I'm curious if you could just reflect on that group as a whole and point to some of the things that you think make a good mentee. So the folks who just really stand out in your mind, who, you know, you've spent more than 5 years with, and just they resonate for you as what a good mentee looks like. If you could just draw out some of those characteristics or qualities for folks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm glad you brought this up, because mentorship is really core to everything we do as investors, as ecosystem builders. And as I mentioned, it was something I was doing organically long before I became an investor, and was one of the things I think that led to me becoming an investor, and one of the skill sets I built up that really led to Chloe Capital forming as well. So it's core to everything we do, and it continues to be core and essential to everything we do. In terms of being a good mentee, I mean, it's similar to being, I would say it aligns also with being a good portfolio company too. So there's a lot of, you know, similar kind of overlap as well, since we do mentor our portfolio companies active as well. One of the things I would say is really good communication skills and being willing to put yourself out there and do the outreach, right? It's the folks that really ask for what they need who tend to get it. So, and who aren't afraid to keep asking and to be persistent about asking and not take no for an answer and continue with follow-up. Like, so follow-up is critical. It's, you know, it's important that you stay in touch with the folks that you're looking for advice from, mentorship from, or the folks you're looking for capital from. You know, it's a similar process. You got to keep putting yourself out there and be persistent. And I don't mind when people are persistent. I don't find it annoying. I mean, obviously, I guess there's a boundary there. If someone was, you know, contacting you every day, several times a day, that might get to be a bit much. But in, you know, typical, if someone's staying in touch with you once a month or once a quarter, or, you know, or something like that, those are really natural cadences. And it really makes sense to stay in touch on those kind of cadences with the folks that you're looking to build those mentee-mentor relationships with. Another thing that I've gotten out of the experiences with my mentees is that, you know, we often end up, a relationship may start as a mentee-mentor kind of relationship, but we really end up supporting each other in so many different ways. It's never one-sided. You shouldn't think of it as one-sided. When you come into a mentee relationship, even if you're the mentee, you should think about what can you do for the other person? How can you give first? That's the really way I go into most of these relationships, is what do I have to offer? What can I give? Whether I'm mentoring someone or whether I'm being mentored by someone, I think about that in all directions, right? Even if I'm asking for capital from someone, because obviously venture capitalists are always raising money as well as their founders are. So if I'm asking for someone for money, I'm also trying to think, how can I be helpful to you? Right? How can I, and if I'm working with someone who's mentoring me, I'm thinking, how can I help them with my networks, with my skills, with my experiences? How can I be helpful? And always looking for those opportunities for you to be helpful. I've gotten a lot out of mentees that I have really learned from that have helped me out, both during the relationship as well as later on. Like, I've had folks that have interned with us who have then turned around later on to be in some really incredible positions with larger private equity firms or with larger VCs or other, or even with potential institutional investors, who've really turned around and come back to me and said, and presented me with incredible opportunities. Right. And so I think that those, building those relationships, thinking how you can help each other, make it really two-way, and how you can give first at every stage is really critical. And everyone really tends to benefit more when that's the case. It just builds something much stronger over time. And then just being honest and open and authentic, obviously, and transparent. And really, I think the people you can help the most, like, the people we can help the most in our portfolio are the ones who come to us early, for example, when there is a potential challenge or problem, the folks that really are both keeping us in the loop really nicely in an organized way through great investor updates, great investor communications. And we can talk about that in a separate question if you want. I have a whole set of guidelines and rules for that that I'm happy to share. But who also come to us when there's a problem and trust that we're going to be there for them and that we really genuinely just want to help and we won't judge them for it. You know, mm-hmm. we're really there to just say, okay, how can we help you solve this problem? If we can be helpful, great. If we can't, ignore us, get the help somewhere else. You know what I mean? Or get the feedback somewhere else. But we genuinely just want to help be another problem solver in the room and try to address things before they become bigger problems that truly become intractable or unsolvable or harder for us to address. Yeah. So folks that are brave enough and authentic enough to come forward and, you know, and be vulnerable about their challenges are also the ones I think who are better able to ultimately solve those problems and get the help they need to solve them. That's taken me a long time to learn too. I'm going to be honest, asking for help is still tough for me. Being vulnerable is still tough, but the better I get at it, the more it pays rewards, you know? So it's a journey we're all on. I'm still working on it, but I know that it's really important.
Yeah. I'm curious if you've seen a few different cycles of what, you know, my good buddy Elliot Robinson at Bessemer calls diversity theater, you know, where the world puts diversity back up on an important, you know, it makes the board meeting, it makes the news, it gets funded a little bit, and then it goes away. And you've seen a couple of those waves. I'm curious if there's anything about where we are right now or where you think we're like almost headed that feels a little different. And that makes you feel like it is now just there's data to show it's important, or there's something that suggests that it's going to stay as opposed to being a wave. Curious your thoughts, given you've seen a few of those.
Yeah, it's a really great question, a profound one that I think we could probably have a much longer conversation about for sure. This is something, I mean, you know, in its earliest form in my career, I started encountering this really early just through my work and impact in the tech space. So in my technology entrepreneur career, and both in software services and software products, my early focus was on this area of technology for impact, technology for change and for positive impact in the world. And in that space, it was a similar thing. There was this whole issue of greenwashing, right, in the business community. And one of the ways that got addressed throughout my career and on my personal timeline was through something called the B Corp movement, Benefit Corp movement, which was basically a movement to for-profit companies looking to make a social impact, but more than that, looking to not just greenwash, not just say it, not just do it for marketing purposes, right, and for the PR announcement, but actually measure what matters, look at the metrics, and actually benchmark their businesses against others and be willing to take those extra steps, right? To really look at how do we actually quantify this. And I was involved in that movement very early on. I was one of the early founding B Corps and then also helped get the legislation passed for Benefit Corps, the legal structure to get passed in New York State, actually won awards for my policy work in that space and you know, continue to be active in that community. I think we need those kinds of similar structures in the DEI world for how do we continue to measure the impact? How do we continue to do this work in a really meaningful way that does go beyond the PR, the news, the, you know, just the diversity theater, as you put it, I think, which is a great, you know, great expression around that. And how do we continue to show that impact in a meaningful way, you know, through that measurement? And I would say that movements like the B Corp movement do help with pieces of that. Like there is actually a, you know, diversity and equity and inclusion component to metrics like that that already exist that we can continue to build on, right? There's more that's needed, and there's more that's needed specifically to this industry and specific for the venture capital world and for the entrepreneurship world specifically. It's also ultimately got to be more than data. So data is part of the solution. I think that there can be better tools. This is actually giving me good ideas as I'm talking to you about more business ideas and ways we can I'm actually just starting to brainstorm ways we can kind of make these tools better and sort of riff on some of the tools that already exist to, you know, to establish what tools like certification programs like B Corp have done for the, you know, for the impact community as a whole and what we can do specifically in the DEI community around that. The other side of it, though, I'll be honest, is that there's a lot of data that's already there that's fantastic data showing this work and showing it in all kinds of profound ways and showing the impact it has on every level. And there's still a lot of people that just won't change their thinking, even in the face of data. And that's something I continue to be confronted with. In this industry. And I'll be honest, that's a bigger problem area. I don't have the solution to that, right? In terms of how do we deal with all the both conscious and unconscious bias that actually prevents people from looking at the data and understanding the data and believing the data, right? Even when they are presented with it. And so even when people do see things like, oh yes, of course, diverse teams are performing better financially. Of course, you know, these startups that we invest in that are all led by women of color, they're performing better financially. Even when people see that, they see the numbers, they still have these hesitations. They still kind of want to go back to their comfortable unconscious bias. And they want to say things like, oh, this is philanthropy. This is something to be a side thing. This is something that we want to kind of section off and cordon off and put into the, you know, like a lot of institutional investors will have a very small percentage of their overall portfolio that they'll, you know, devote to these areas. And then they'll say, oh, the bigger, you know, multi-billion dollar portfolio that we have is all going to go to this. And then, you know, we're going to devote $1 million, you know, to women and people of color of our billions that we have, right? So accessing and unlocking institutional capital continues to be a huge barrier in this industry. There's a lot more reasons for that that we can talk about. And continuing to fight unconscious and conscious bias continues to be a massive challenge. There's still a huge uphill battle there, even when confronted with data. I don't have all the solutions here. I've got a lot of ideas about potential solutions. I've got a lot of ideas about things we want to build with Chloe as we build out this ecosystem. I have ideas about new vehicles that we can create and new structures we can create that are more amenable to, you know, unlocking more institutional capital, making this, you know, really busting this wide open. But even though I have all the structural problems solved in my head, it's like I can't necessarily go in and change everyone's mind and thinking. And that part is still continues to be a challenge. So if you find the perfect solution, let me know. I'd love to collaborate on the solutions. We've got a lot of ideas that we want to build and want to build very collaboratively, in fact, that will involve other funds. So we could certainly stay in touch, and that's more to be discussed and to be determined. I can tell you this, I'm going to keep working on it. This is my mission. It's something I'm going to keep, you know, I'm devoted sort of this next chapter of my life's work and career to really working on addressing and solving some of these problems, even if I don't have all the answers yet.
Yeah. Fantastic. With that said, I'm curious if there are a few pieces of advice that you think are more relevant to female entrepreneurs today than maybe 10 or 15 years ago. You know, you've sort of had a career of giving people advice as they go out on their journey, and knowing what you know now about the system and just sort of how it's built, like, are there a few things that you think are just more relevant to the 2022 female entrepreneur that's getting started that you might share?
It's a really, really good question. You know, I think I stand by this idea of, you know, continuing to find ways to give first. I think it still does pay off, and continue to find ways to mentor others. So one of the main things that we're working on at Chloe Capital is this sort of mentors at all levels kind of issue, and this issue of how do we grow the ecosystem longer term. We do that by investing in women who are also going to invest in the next generation of founders and who are going to continue to keep that cycle moving. So one of the things we do is we look actively for founders that are mentoring others already organically and naturally. And those are the ones that we know when they have that multi-billion dollar exit, they're going to turn around and invest in the next generation. And that's how we really grow this movement, right? All together. So for example, so my advice is to mentor others, is to give first, is to build those ecosystems yourself, and that will turn around and give back to you ultimately. And I don't think that has changed in 2022 any more than it was earlier. I think that notion of how we build these ecosystems is still critical, how we help each other out and raise each other up. I think there was actually an issue in the past of, you know, there not being enough room at the table for women early in the movement and for people of color, and experiencing this issue of, oh, I'm going to be that only one at the table, so I'm going to beat down all the other people who come. Mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And there, we've experienced, all of us have experienced some of that culture and have experienced some of our own mentors sometimes almost being competitive with us or, you know, beating us down or not allowing us room at the table. So the approach we take is really the exact opposite of how do we make room for everyone? How do we bring lift everyone up together, you know, as opposed to this sort of competitive, there's only room for one. It's like, how do we look at this, you know, not as a pie, we can only each get our tiny little slice, but how do we make the whole pie bigger and make room for everyone, you know, at the table? So to give a concrete example, Salisa Berrien is an amazing Black woman founder from our portfolio. She founded COI Energy. It's a company that is focused on helping companies with their energy efficiency, and it's a data software platform. But she also, through her mission, you know, gives back to communities and disadvantaged communities where folks are energy insecure and finds ways to help. Is built into the business model along the way, but she's also, you know, got a great revenue and business model. So it's not, you know, trading impact for financial performance. So incredible businesswoman, incredible model. She, from the beginning, I mentored her through several years through my role as an advisor with New York State, helping her get connected to New York State resources. She was someone who took every resource that I put in front of her and like just really took full advantage of it and made incredible progress, like hooked her up to a competition, 76 West. She ended up winning the competition, you know, winning tremendous money for her business, you know, really just every time I would open a door, she would just run through it. Again, story of an amazing kind of mentee, but she was also right from the start, finding ways to give back to other people too, right? Both through her business model and through her own mentorship of others. She has actually a whole retreat and program that she does for other, you know, folks to come together and get mentorship and support, was building that in right from the start. And so she was somebody when she participated in our Diversity and Climate Tech Accelerator, and we made an investment in her company. We then brought her back for our next accelerator program to come mentor the others in our Pittsburgh accelerator program. She actually had some ties to Pittsburgh and to Pennsylvania. She was a graduate of Pitt and on the board of trustees there. So she was thrilled to have an opportunity to come back. And she got to mentor the other founders in our portfolio as part of that program. It was also, guess what? A great chance for her to connect with a whole new group of investors, right? At that accelerator program. So it really benefits everyone when we do that. And again, I have no doubt that she's one of those founders that when she does have her multi-billion dollar exit, it's just a question of when, not if, then she's one of those founders that I know is going to give back and I know is going to invest in that next generation, founders of all colors, founders of all genders, who's really going to help bring this movement forward and advance the ecosystem for all of us. So that's my advice is, you know, be like that kind of a founder, be that founder that gives back, that also benefits along the way, you know, and then keep on doing that as you reach each milestone. Because it's not, we call it sort of near peer mentoring and near peer role models, because you are doing at a smaller scale everything that you want to be doing at a larger scale at every stage and can be building those skills at every stage. And I think that's something I've learned through my career too. And even just in my short journey with Chloe Capital over the last 5 years. When we started Chloe Capital, you know, we raised our first special purpose vehicle was $50,000, you know, and we tried to do it at a very small scale though, right from day one, what we wanted to do, which was, you know, investing in women of all colors, investing in women who were solving big problems. And we did that right from our very first accelerator program and our first investment. And then we continued to do it at a slightly larger scale each time. And we're still, you know, doing that now. Now we have a $25 million fund, but we want to keep going, you know what I mean? Until that's a $1 billion fund or more. And we're doing that same thing at every stage, just as you need to be mentoring at every stage. And then you're going to become that mentor eventually who has that multi-billion dollar exit. But you can start doing it earlier. You don't have to wait.
Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. I'm curious if there's, I'd call this my fangirl question. Like, is there a fund that you would point to that has a female leader that you think we're going to wake up in 10 years and look at fund returns, and this woman is going to be, without a doubt, one of the top performers, kind of starting today? Who would you point to?
That's a really tough one, because we, you know, co-invest and collaborate with so many other amazing fund managers who are all, you know, emerging fund managers and women and people of color who are doing just incredible work in the space. So the idea of picking just one It's going to be really tough, but I can share, you know, a few of the folks that we, you know, that we co-invest alongside of, and that we, you know, have worked alongside of, some that we're continuing to collaborate with and follow in their journey across all different ways. So some of those groups and, you know, leaders in the industry include everything from some of the earliest groups in the space, like Golden Seeds and Astia Angels, and groups that were kind of focused on this, folks like Backstage Capital, we've co-invested with multiple times. We have folks like Next Wave Impact, and we have Steel Sky Ventures doing great work in the women's health space, Maria Belisarius. We've got folks like, there's lots of groups that are helping build this sort of community together, like Transact Global and Women in VC and groups like that, that we've been, you know, really happy to connect with. Include VC is another one of those. Lots of groups that are doing these kind of more fund to funds type models, or, you know, finding ways to build that out more. You know, there's groups like Harlem Capital. Oh gosh, I'm going to get, it's too many to go through this, like go through the entire list of all of our investors. We literally have over 1,000 co-investors so I'm sure I missed it. Oh, Pipeline Angels is another one that we've worked with quite a bit as co-investors and collaborators. So I can't say I have like this one, you know, role model, and that we're trying to be that, like that's the role model I want, doesn't exist yet. It's like what we are creating. Is kind of the role model longer term, but we are trying to collaborate with so many other amazing people along the way who are all fighting the same fight and who are really trying to work to build this ecosystem for all of us. So, you know, we're trying to work alongside as many of those groups as we can, you know.
Sure.
Lumen Capital is another good one. They've got a lot of really great data studies that folks can check out. So many.
Yeah. No, fantastic. Well, the way Cambridge works is they can't all be number one. So we will, time will tell.
Yeah.
But I do, I know a lot of those names, and I look forward to, honestly, if any of those were number one and sat, you know, top decile, top 1% in a Cambridge return in 10 years from now, I think it'd be really good for all of the funds that you mentioned. So
absolutely.
Maybe to step out a little bit to a little bit of a meta question to wrap us up. It's a quick question, and I'm not going to give you much more than the question itself. No preface, but curious how you'd answer this question. What is wrong with the world?
What is wrong with the world is that we do not have all the right people at the table solving problems together, that we are trying to solve the world's biggest problems, and we're trying to do it with a very small section of the population that doesn't fully understand the problems they're solving. Anand Girard artist expresses this really well. And, you know, in his recent book too, that like, why would you have some of the people who've created a lot of the problems as the ones who you're leaning on to solve them, right? It's not in their interests to solve the problems. They're not going to solve them, right? So it's, you know, if we just lean on the 1% and the billionaires of the world to solve and help address and make the world better for all of us through, you know, just typical philanthropic models and stuff, it's not going to address the problem, because it's just going to continue to perpetuate the structures that led to there being that 1% and there being the kind of inequity that there is in the world, right? So we need a different approach. We need to break down the current systems and rebuild new systems from scratch, and then those new systems need to rise up and just take over. so it's kind of more of a burn it all down, rebuild it, you know, approach, but which is not easy. But you know, we're working steadily at trying to get there. I don't know if I articulated that perfectly, but that's a big question.
It's an open-ended question. And last one for you: what is right with the world?
Well, I think some of the bright spots I just shared of, you know, seeing these, it does give me a lot of inspiration to seeing these pockets of both, you know, these incredible diverse women tech leaders that we support in our portfolio, seeing them go out there and change the world is truly deeply inspiring, and seeing them continue to fight, seeing other emerging fund managers like us who are women and people of color who are out there creating these new funds with very little access to capital and a big, big struggle ahead, but who are continuing to fight really hard to change the industry for everyone. All of that gives me a lot of inspiration and hope for the future. My role as mother gives me a lot of hope for the future too. I get choked up thinking about my daughters, but
I named Chloe Capital after my daughters because they give me so much hope for the future and the next generation. Like, they are really, like, talk about what I just said about wanting to change the world. The next generation of kids, like, they are really going after it in terms of really seeing the problems and the structures that we have created in the previous generations and where we need to rebuild things and build newer structures that are really going to profoundly make the world better for everyone. And I really have huge faith in that younger generation. Like, they are really crushing it.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Super powerful. Alisa Miller Out, Managing Partner, Chloe Capital. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Brian. Take care. So appreciate you. Thanks for doing this work.
Thanks. That's it for this episode of The Road Untraveled. I hope you enjoyed it. And if you're interested in learning more, please check us out at theroaduntraveled.io. You can follow me on Twitter at bhalls1, and you can follow The Road Untraveled on Twitter at VC Perspectives. My one ask to you is to share this with someone that you think might enjoy the episode or any of the episodes that we've had. We've really enjoyed building this community and hope to continue building going forward. Hope to see you at the next episode. Thanks for listening.